You are now listening to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast with Dr. Taylor Crick. Dr. Taylor is an expert in helping those suffering with autoimmune disease, and he himself has autoimmune disease. Autoimmunity is rampant today. The purpose of this podcast is to educate about the underlying causes and natural solutions to halt autoimmune disease progression. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. For more information from Dr. Taylor, visit www.autoimmuneeducationacademy.com. Without further ado, here's your host, Dr. Taylor Crick.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Doc Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Taylor Crick, and I love explaining the mechanisms behind autoimmunity and chronic disease. So today's episode is about your liver. You want to talk about mechanisms. The liver is kind of like the king of mechanisms. Now, I also just even put in my notes to say something about Liver King. You know, Liver King is wildly famous right now. If you don't know who Liver King is, he's an online social media presence. And liver is just very, very famous right now in the health sphere because of its nutritional value. You know, all the B vitamins and vitamin A and just other things that can come from eating liver. And liver was, you know, a prized food by our ancestors, you know, organ meats and things like that. But it's just really popular. Now, I'm not talking about eating liver, even though I'm all for it. I'm talking about your liver, what your liver does. Your liver does so much. It's really quite an unbelievable organ. So today, I'm just going to go through kind of everything that I know about the liver. Now, when I do these overview podcasts, you know, I don't spend a ton of time, you know, researching these things. I just know a lot about the liver. So it's not just regurgitating, you know, Wikipedia pages of what all the liver does. It's more like, okay, what do I know about the liver? What do I see as disrupting the liver? What are some of the basic functions? What are some of the labs? And then what are some of the nutritional dietary strategies and things? Just overview. So this is not, you know, specific to your case or hepatitis or autoimmune hepatitis, but I'm going to touch on all of those things because when you understand, you know, how things function, you understand these mechanisms, you understand that diagnosis is just a name that they put on it. And especially with liver, a lot of times the diagnosis is just kind of how progressed is the damage. And that's often the case with any diagnosis. How progressed is the damage and what name can we put on it? But it's not like that disease is kind of the entity that you have. You have disruption in your physiology, period. And it presents itself, it manifests itself as rheumatoid arthritis or autoimmune hepatitis or fill in the blank with whatever disease, Alzheimer's, cancer, heart disease, diabetes. You have physiological dysfunction and it leads to problems. So your liver does so much. Also, too, I guess before I get into liver a little bit more, it's a pretty good segue from our last episode, which is all about parasites. So parasites can actually have a big impact on the liver. So sometimes when I see elevated liver enzymes, parasites are certainly on my list. That doesn't mean that I'm thinking, oh yeah, you have parasites for sure. I'm not a parasite heavy guy, as I mentioned in the last episode. But when they are there or they are present, they can absolutely affect the liver. And I've even seen some cases of, you know, some other misdiagnosed autoimmunity that appeared to be parasitic infection. And the liver, you know, so it's a good segue to today's episode about the liver. Also, we're kind of on a focus of gut stuff right now, too. And the liver is just intimately connected to the gut. It's intimately connected to everything. But even in the context of like food sensitivities, or let's say a dendritic cell, you know, tests antigens in the lumen of the gut, well, then those are going to go to a mesenteric lymph node, and they go right up the hepatic portal vein, and there's a lot of liver involvement. The liver's like one of the first places for immune surveillance from the gut. So when there are pathogens in the gut, the liver and the Kupffer cells and macrophages in the liver can be very, very important in the immune response from the gut. So anyway, your liver does so much, so it's related to your gut, but it's also a detox organ. You know, that's probably what most people associate with the liver is, you know, detoxification or drinking too much alcohol or things like that. But when you understand all the different mechanisms, you can really start to put these pieces together of how they all fit together mechanistically. And then if you have an end-stage problem, like fatty liver or diabetes or, you know, any symptom, fatigue, bloating, you know, whatever, you or elevated liver enzymes, you can kind of piece together these mechanisms, say, okay, what do I need to do for my liver, and what are my options that are available? So your liver has, you know, I would say three main roles. The first one is metabolic, metabolism. It's really, really important for metabolism. Your liver is chock full of mitochondria. There are tons of mitochondria, and mitochondria are in organs that require a lot of energy output. So the liver is one. The brain has the most. I mean, you could probably imagine that your brain requires the most energy. Your heart is probably the second most, and then your liver is third. And then your muscles, you know, for locomotion. So a lot of mitochondria, a lot of metabolism happens in the liver, but your liver also controls a lot of metabolism as well. So a lot of metabolic diseases, you know, the liver is just really, really central to that. So like blood sugar control, the liver does a lot of your blood sugar control. The liver stores glycogen, which is stored sugar. The liver does gluconeogenesis, which is converting protein into sugar when we need sugar. The liver also does lipid metabolism, so cholesterol, triglycerides, and you know, breaking down your fats and kind of putting those into chylomicrons and carrying things to disperse them into the right places in the body. The liver's intimately involved in all of metabolism. And that's why, you know, metabolic diseases like diabetes have a liver component. So metabolism is one thing. Then it's an immune organ as well. The liver has a lot of immune function. The Kupffer cells, the resident macrophages of the liver. And there's just also a lot of other immune, you know, subsets and subspecialties in the liver. I'm not going to go through all the detail of what the immune or what the liver does for immune system, but a lot of pathogen surveillance and a lot of pathogen clearance through macrophages and just like getting rid of problems before they become bigger problems. So the liver is also a very big immune organ. Then lastly, detox. You know, and you could call that metabolic, but detox, it clears things out. There's something called hepatic biotransformation. Hepatic meaning liver. And biotransformation, meaning it transforms things so that they can be excreted. It transforms things like xenobiotics, which are chemicals and toxins from the outside environment. And it also transforms things like endogenous things like estrogens and testosterones and things that our body needs to clear out. The liver will transform them so they can be excreted in our poop and in our pee. It'll make them more water soluble so they can be gotten rid of. So detox, we're going to talk about quite a bit here. So let's talk about some liver problems, because the liver's intimately involved in, you know, let's say every person in every case that I see, but it doesn't mean we're targeting liver every single time. And how do we know, and what are some liver problems? Well, these are actual, you know, diagnoses or criteria or classifications, but the progression of liver issues goes like this. Fatty liver. So fatty liver is first. Fatty liver can then progress, and this is all along a spectrum of fibrosis. So as liver problems progress, you get more of what's called fibrosis, which is like scarring and connective tissue formation. And cirrhosis is really more like scarring, I should say. Fibrosis is more like just extra connective tissue. So fatty liver, then non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, then non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. So that's just another name for it. And then cirrhosis. So that's kind of the progression of those four. Now, those are the big issues that you can have with your liver. You can also have diabetes. You can also have autoimmune hepatitis. Autoimmune hepatitis is fairly rare as far as the diagnoses, but I don't know if we ran these antibodies on everybody, would more people have it? Who knows? But it's not like a common thing that comes across my desk, even as seeing a lot of autoimmune cases and seeing, you know, a lot of people contacting me about their autoimmune conditions. Now, hepatitis is just liver inflammation, right? So you could have hepatitis, you could have viral hepatitis, you could have environmental hepatitis, or you could have transient hepatitis too. You could also have just chronic liver disease. Chronic liver diseases, all these things kind of fall under chronic liver disease. So they're all just, again, different names for liver problems. But how do you know when those things are occurring, or how can you know, if you want to predict that those things are occurring so that you can stop them? So labs, you know, basic blood labs are the best thing for liver, even in the context of autoimmune hepatitis. Like, autoimmune hepatitis, again, is a diagnostic criteria, but it is diagnosed by what's called actin or smooth muscle antibodies, and sometimes mitochondrial antibodies. That's more for gallbladder autoimmunity, but those are both general antibodies. That's not saying like the immune system is attacking your liver. It's saying it's attacking actin or smooth muscle, which happens to be in the liver. So it's a diagnosis that there's not like one marker that's like, oh, you have actin antibodies, you have liver autoimmunity. You got to look at it in the grand scheme of a lot of different things from a lab testing perspective. But so the first thing and the most important thing are the liver enzymes, the transaminases, AST and ALT is what they'll look like on your lab work. Typically, those would be increased with things like hepatitis and, you know, you look for elevated liver enzymes. But those can also be decreased, like in early fatty liver. In early stage fatty liver, the ALT and AST will actually be depressed. Now, along those lines, too, with AST and ALT, there's also something called GGT, which is gamma glutamyl transferase, or it's sometimes called GGTP. Now, it's not as commonly run. I'm saying this so that if you're looking at your own labs, you can look and see. Now, let me go back to the AST and ALT. Functionally, to me, what catches my eye is seeing them above 26. So sometimes, depending on your age and your gender, sometimes the lab reference range will be anything under 34 is normal. Sometimes it'll be anything under 54 is normal. Depending on AST, ALT, the normal ranges and your gender and your age, the normal ranges vary a little bit. But anything over 26 catches my eye with those liver enzymes. What happens is as the liver is being damaged, those enzymes can spill out more into the blood. So they are an indication of liver damage. GGT is a little bit different, gamma glutamyl transferase, but really the same thing. When we start to see that elevated, then we're looking at either, you know, there could be biliary obstruction, there could be liver damage. There's a lot of things that could be going on with the GGT. And then the other one is alkaline phosphatase. Alkaline phosphatase is another enzyme that's expressed a lot in the liver. So when we see that increase, alkaline phosphatase increased, we start to be more concerned of that something is damaging the liver. Then some other things that are fairly normal, triglycerides, your cholesterol, certainly relevant, and BUN, blood urea nitrogen. So all of these things, and sometimes platelets, you know, there's glucose, blood sugar, there's different things, hemoglobin A1C, a lot of different general metabolic markers that you see all the time on a CBC, a complete blood count, or rather a complete metabolic panel, I should say, comprehensive metabolic panel. A lot of those markers can be used to analyze the liver. And a lot of times, like if you've ever been to your doctor, like pretty much ever, they're like, good news, everything looks normal, right? And so it is fairly rare for these things to be super abnormal. But as what I see is that we'll see trends, is that somebody doesn't have blatant hepatitis, but they might have liver enzymes in the 30s, and they might also have alkaline phosphatase raised, and they might also have cholesterol or blood sugar issues. And it's like, okay, yeah, your liver's involved in this case. Some other ones that are liver markers are some of the acute phase reactants. Now, what that means is the liver produces a lot of proteins in the blood. That's not all, but like just a lot of the proteins that are in the blood. So like ferritin, ferritin is storage iron, but ferritin is also an acute phase reactant. So that means that in acute inflammation, ferritin is going to go up, pretty drastically. So is C-reactive protein. There's other acute phase reactants like even HDL cholesterol or different fibrinogen, plasminogen, ceruloplasmin. So different enzyme activity that are expressed when you're under a lot of inflammation. So a lot of those come from the liver. It can be, again, another sign of liver damage, but that's also more like something else is causing the inflammation. Your liver's releasing those things. So labs can be very, very helpful. Imaging, too, when things get, you know, to a more severe point. I'm not as familiar with imaging, but if you go in, you've got any, you know, focal necrosis, you've got any fat deposits, you've got, you know, any fatty fatty liver, you've got any issues on imaging, yeah, we don't want that. I think that's probably pretty obvious. And once you get to that point, you know, you got to be pretty, I don't want to say progressed, but like, why are they even going in and doing imaging of your liver? You probably have some symptoms or some labs that would lead to that. So I think by that point, you probably know that you've got some liver issues. So what can damage a liver? Because sometimes we will work our way backwards clinically, meaning we'll see labs that say like, okay, something is damaging your liver. What could it be? Now, we could put people on liver-supporting vitamins and herbs and things like that, but if we don't know what's damaging their liver, then how are we ever really, you know, helping them in the long term? We still have to repair that damage, but we want to know what's doing the damage. So the first thing I'd say is diet and lifestyle and metabolic syndrome. So that one, I think, you know, on a podcast like this, almost goes without saying that, like, you can't be sedentary and eat McDonald's and drink a 12-pack of Bud Light every day and expect to have a healthy liver. I mean, I think that most people know that. So you need to be exercising. You need to be moving. You need your blood sugar to be well-controlled. You need to be avoiding pesticides and processed foods and toxins in food and, you know, too much alcohol and too much medications and, like, all those things. That's lifestyle. So your diet absolutely matters. Your lifestyle absolutely matters. Your exercise absolutely matters. Of course, all those things 100% matter. But then the liver can also be damaged by toxins, 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 toxins. I think that's the one that we're going to talk about the most today, because what I see with liver issues is I see when the liver is overburdened by having to clear out too many things. Like, the liver might need to clear out, let's say, mold. And then let's say also that it's like pesticides. Somebody might live near a farm. And then let's say it's estrogen as well. So it's not always just things from the outside, but let's say it's a female that around, you know, the time of ovulation or around the time of her cycle, when her estrogen is at its highest, might be when her symptoms are maxing out the most. And that makes me suspect that the liver is overburdened and is not able to clear out all of those toxins rapidly. Or when somebody has a anesthesia, like a problem recovering from anesthesia, or if somebody has a vaccine reaction to any of the available vaccines, then it's a sign that their body just doesn't clear things out very well or doesn't clear things out rapidly. The body has to clear out everything all the time. So you take a Tylenol, your body's got to clear that out. You take a drink of alcohol, your body's got to clear that out. You're exposed to a chemical or a fragrance, let's say a perfume or a fragrance, your body's got to clear that out. And so there's all these pathways that I'm going to talk about here in a minute of how those get cleared out in phase one and phase two of detox and methylation and just all the different mechanisms. How can we target those mechanisms more specifically based on what your genetics show or what your symptoms show or what your labs show? So toxins, 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 toxins. I mean, obviously, if you followed my podcast, you know that I say toxins, toxins, toxins a lot because they're just so relevant. And again, the liver is just like the filter for those. Now the kidneys as well, your gut, your drainage, you know, you've got to be sweating, you've got to be limping, you know, all those things. But liver is by far the most important as far as like actually transforming these toxins so they can get out of the body. The other one is parasites. You know, I mentioned that and I'll just, you know, leave it at that they can damage the liver. So can viruses. You know, we know that. We know that, you know, hepatitis, hep C, hep B can damage the liver. So can other viral infections, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus, you know, different viral and herpetic viruses and others can impact and affect liver function just greatly. Another one is like food sensitivity even. So if somebody's liver is inflamed, we could look at, okay, what food sensitivities are being, you know, kind of presented and kind of, you know, addressed. Gut inflammation, let's just say gut inflammation can drive liver inflammation. There's a gut-liver axis. There's several, you know, there's an axis in the body for like almost everything. There's a gut-liver axis. There's a liver-spleen axis. There's a gut-liver-brain axis. There's probably a gut-liver-brain-spleen axis. You know, it's like everything connects. And so when we're studying just the associations between these two things, like the gut and the liver. We're just studying how does the gut communicate with the liver and vice versa. But there is a gut-liver connection. And then lastly, autoimmunity, like I mentioned. Autoimmunity, you know, shockingly for the, you know, title of this podcast and stuff, is the one we're going to talk about the least, because how do you solve liver autoimmunity? Well, you listen to the first, you know, 41 episodes of this podcast or whatever number we're on now, and that's how. You know, you look for what's driving the autoimmunity, just the same way that you would solve thyroid autoimmunity or brain autoimmunity or joint autoimmunity. You look at, okay, you know, why am I having this autoimmune process, and what are the drivers? Is it foods and gut health? Is it toxins? Is it hormones? Is it stress? Is it hidden infections? What's driving my autoimmune process? And you go through and you check off the list. So the way that I treat liver autoimmunity is the same way I treat any other autoimmunity, is by supporting the person. Now, with liver autoimmunity, I might be a little bit more suspicious of certain things like toxins or viral things or whatever else. But the way that we, you know, kind of work backwards for that is not that much different. The last thing before we get into some of these processes, you know, there's something in the liver called Kupffer cells. I'm not going to talk that much about them, but they're resident macrophages. There's other things in the liver, like, you know, just general hepatocytes. And you can see, you know, autoimmune against hepatocytes. That's not diagnostic for autoimmune hepatitis, but you can measure that on Cyrex panels. You can have cytochrome P450 autoimmunity, which is a really, really, really big deal. So there are some other things that I didn't mention, but these Kupffer cells are just kind of in my notes. So I don't know. I guess that's all I'm going to say about them. So let's talk about detox, 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 because this is where we get into, you know, the weeds of, like, okay, let's say it's detox. Like, I just actually had a patient in. She has severe lesions all throughout her brain. Okay, and the change. Okay, she's 30. She's got lesions all throughout her brain. It's not MS. You know, one neurologist said, yeah, this is MS. The other neurologist said, no, it's not. She's been all over the place, you know, to all the neurologists, you know. But anyway, she grew up on a farm. She lives on a farm, and there's a lot of toxic chemicals. So how are those detoxified? And what is the, so we know that toxins are a part of her history. Let's just say that. We know that toxins are a part of her history. How would that lead to these issues? And what do we need to specifically support? Detox as a solution is like, great. That's like saying that, you know, if you're broke by the side of the road, it's like, well, you need wealth. It's like, well, thanks. You know, like, thanks a lot. You know, how do you get wealth? You know, it's like, what does that mean? Like, what does detox mean? Well, there's a lot of meanings to that. You want to remove toxins. You want to make sure the bucket's emptying faster than it's filling. But what does that mean? And I do talk about this in more detail in some of the detox mechanisms, you know, podcasts, and how all these things fit together as far as liver and methylation and lymph and all the things. But the liver does something called phase one and phase two of biotransformation. So remember, we're talking about hepatic biotransformation. So phase one obviously comes before phase two. But what's really, really interesting is that a lot of these toxins are fat soluble. Okay. What phase one does is makes them a little bit more water soluble. And then phase two makes them even more water soluble so they can be excreted. So picture, like, I don't know, what's it called? Assembly line, where one person's handing something to the second person. If the first person is going a lot faster than the second person, all the stuff they're going to hand them is going to build up because the second person is not clearing them out fast enough. Or vice versa, if the second person's going a lot faster than the first person, second person's kind of bored, like, come on, keep feeding me, phase one, keep feeding me. But phase one just isn't keeping up with the demand. So you can have different speeds of phase one and phase two. And I think that's really, really important, especially if you have a slow phase two. Phase two is probably, you know, I mean, obviously, just like anything else, they're both important, but it's the more important one, because if phase two is slower than phase one of detoxification, you can be what's called a pathological detoxifier, which, because when you take these toxins and you put them through phase one, it sometimes makes them more dangerous. So the intermediate metabolite in between phase one and phase two is actually more dangerous than the toxin was to begin with. So you want to get that through phase two and converted so that it can be excreted. But you can have problems with this. So let's talk about these. So phase one, what are some of the things that phase one needs? Now I'm going to read through this fast, but you're just going to hear like, okay, it's a lot of B vitamins, it's a lot of amino acids. There's different reactions that occur in phase one, like oxidation reduction, hydrolysis, dehalogenation, you know, just different things. And all these reactions produce a lot of free radicals and a lot of reactive oxygen species. So you need a lot of antioxidants through this whole process. So for both phases, you need a lot of antioxidants. So vitamins A, C, E, glutathione is very, very important. Manganese, selenium, copper, zinc, CoQ10, you know, sulforaphane from broccoli sprouts, really, really good. Bioflavonoids, you know, milk thistle and different things that can help protect the liver cells from free radical and oxidative damage. You need those for both phases. But phase one requires, you know, some B vitamins, B2, B3, B6, B9, B12, you know, so certainly some methyl donors, some B vitamins, you know, that just are part of this. Now, methylation is more of a part of phase two, but it's really important for both. And those B vitamins, they kind of help with everything liver-wise. You need a lot of B vitamins, and not only a lot, but an adequate amount of B vitamins. Now, a lot of people, I'm going to touch on genetics here in a second, and a lot of people, because of certain genetic needs, have higher needs for certain Bs than others. Genetic needs and environmental exposure. So I'll see people, you know, with a lot of environmental exposures that have a higher need for B2. I'll see people with genetic needs that might have a higher need for B9 or B12 or B6 or, you know, whatever the case is. But we can tell that when we put all these, you know, kind of put all these puzzle pieces together. You also need glutathione in both phases, really. You need those B vitamins in both phases, branched chain amino acids, flavonoids. You need these in both phases, really. So, but phase one is oxidation, reduction, hydrolysis, and converting into intermediate metabolites that are more water soluble. Then phase two is a lot of our more famous detox words, like methylation. Methylation, very, very famous. MTHFR, very, very famous. But there are a ton of methylation genes. We'll talk about a few of them today. Glucuronidation. Glucuronidation is another really, really important one. Glucuronidation clears things out like toxic estrogens, clears things out like mold metabolites, clears things out even like from overcooking your food, like burning and charring your food, clears those things out, clears you know, medications out like NSAIDs, and that's glucuronidation. The next one is sulfation. Sulfation, really, really important also. Then there's conjugation. There's two different kinds of conjugation. There's glutathione conjugation. There's glycine conjugation. There's acetylation. So all of these different mechanisms or pathways are necessary and have to be clicking, you know, correctly for that phase two to work. And a lot of, again, genetics involved, a lot of, you know, if one pathway, let's say glucuronidation is overburdened by a toxin like aflatoxin, okay? Aflatoxin is a mold toxin, mycotoxin, and it's cleared by glucuronidation. Let's say it's overburdened. Well, then guess what? You're not going to clear out estrogen as well. And if you have some genetics for this, like you have COMT genetics, then you're not going to clear those things out very well oftentimes. And then estrogen can build up. And let's say in your 20s, you get symptoms like, you know, painful breasts and some different, you know, menstrual cycles type things. But then as you get older, maybe you develop breast cancer because toxic estrogen metabolites build up and are not able to be cleared, they raise your risk of something like breast cancer. Now, obviously, that's an illustration, but it's certainly a possibility that as you're exposed to more toxins, other things build up like toxic estrogens that can lead to things like breast cancer or, excuse me. You know, other hormone-dominant cancers. So that's phase one and phase two. And this whole process makes a lot of reactive oxygen species. So you don't want one phase to be faster than the other. And if you just have to detoxify a lot of stuff all the time. Let's say your phase one, your phase two are both working fine, but you just drink a lot, you know, then you're just generating a lot of reactive oxygen species. And if you don't have the antioxidant capacity to neutralize those reactive oxygen species, it's going to lead to tissue damage long term. I also, as I'm talking, you know, with some of these mechanisms, I didn't really get into this mechanism as much here in my notes, but I just did a YouTube video about one of these mechanisms. So let me talk about this one real quick, and then I'll get into some of these genetics. So this is about how toxins accumulate in the mitochondria of the liver, and they block fat oxidation. So if you block fat oxidation in the liver, then you can't burn fat as well, and then you don't produce energy as well, first off. So then the liver can't do all of its functions. If it doesn't have enough battery power, everything's going to be depleted a little bit. But as you cannot burn fat, then guess what stores in the liver? Fat. That's fatty liver. That's how that starts. And then those fat deposits can become oxidized, and it leads to extensive liver damage. So in my YouTube video, I'm showing from the scientific literature how toxins block fatty acid beta oxidation in the liver. That leads to fat accumulation in the liver. And I'm also going through how we can determine some of this on labs even, because there are some other labs that look at, you know, deeper things like methylation or glutathione or methyl hippuric or different, you know, hippuric acid that are all super relevant to the liver and the clearance of some of these things. But you want a lot of antioxidants through this, even if your phase one and phase two are working, you know, fairly even. So the next thing I want to talk about are some genetics that, like, I have horrible liver genes. And when you look at liver genes, you know, a lot of the famous genes like MTHFR are liver genes. Now, that doesn't mean they're only expressed in the liver. You know, these genes are expressed in, you know, largely in every cell or in, like, many, many tissues. But they're more expressed in the liver because the liver does what we're talking about. It does methylation. It does acetylation. It does glucuronidation. It's like that's its job. So MTHFR, very, very famous, okay? But now, let's just say that methylation is important. MTHFR, there's MTRR. There's a lot of other methylation genes. HNMT, which is clears histamine. It's histidine and methyltransferase. So there's all kinds of methylation. So all methylation matters for the liver. Here are some that are specific or that I think are really, really important. One is PEMT. Oh, the other thing that I should mention, I should have said this way before. What the liver does with these toxins, once they're more water soluble, it puts them into the bile. And then bile gets put in the gallbladder, and that's how they get dumped out. So PEMT helps make bile. So, and PEMT, interestingly enough, is estrogen dominant or estrogen dependent, rather. So when in the presence of excess estrogen, so like I'll have some patients that will have gallbladder pain, liver gallbladder pain, when their estrogen is high, like at ovulation times and right before their period. And it's like, okay, that's when your estrogen is built up the most and it's causing your gallbladder to be more sluggish and your bile to be more sludgy. So PEMT, the M in there stands for methylation. The other one that I mentioned was COMT, which is catechol-O-methyltransferase. So catecholamines are things like stress neurotransmitters, adrenaline, dopamine, and epinephrine, norepinephrine, which is the other name for adrenaline. So let's say that you have a lot of stress, and you have a lot of stress neurotransmitters, and at the same time, you have a lot of estrogen, and at the same time, you have a lot of toxins. Well, not all those are going to get cleared out, so some of those are going to stick around, and it might be one or it might be the other, but your symptoms can largely determine it. So COMT and PEMT work synergistically, but again, the M stands for methylation. Some others, cytochrome P450 genes. There's all kinds of different variations of cytochrome P450. What cytochrome P450 is an enzyme pathway. I should have talked about it with phase one and phase two. Cytochrome P450 is an enzyme pathway that is just crucial in this hepatic biotransformation. So there's a myriad of different SNPs for cytochrome P450 genes but you can have a lot of genetics. Now, what I recommend too while I'm talking about this, I will recommend NutraHacker a lot of times for a cheap, it's free, an easy to interpret genetic report. So if you have a 23andMe or an Ancestry.com, if you have anything that has, you know, raw genetic data, you can upload it into NutraHacker for free and get a report of all your detox and methylation genes. Now, there's, you know, tens of thousands of other genes that are not on this, but a lot of times these are the ones that really matter when we're treating like chronic and complex cases, you know? So I really do find that the methylation and the detox genes absolutely matter. There's others like NAT, there's others like, you know, I don't know, there's a whole variety, but, and I forget where I was at, but another one is, cytochrome P450, that's where I was at. Then there's glutathione genes, so GST, GSTX, GSTP1, then there's also genes, you know, like methylation, glutathione, homocysteine, all these cycles kind of overlap, and there's all kinds of problems, and I hear all kinds of, like, freaking Instagram comments and stuff of, like, sometimes people's glutathione is completely normal in their labs because the body is stealing from other places in order to keep their glutathione normal. Sometimes somebody's glutathione is completely depleted, and there are other places in their labs that we can find these indications. You have to look at all these areas to see how they interlink, because it is a pretty complex web with a lot of these methylation and liver processes. Another one is interleukin-6. So interleukin-6 is made primary. It's an inflammatory cytokine. So if you've ever heard of even like C-reactive protein, the lab marker for inflammation, that's an interleukin-6 marker. I have IL-6 genes, and so IL-6 is made primarily by the Kupffer cells in the liver. So in vagus nerve stimulation, different the berberine, you know, different things can attenuate IL-6, but if you have IL-6 genes, that can lead to more problems from inflammation coming from the liver. I think that's it for the genetics. There are a lot of liver genetics, though, that could be involved in these processes. Then lastly, what do we do about it? What are the options out there as far as, you know, products and things and so on and so forth? Now, I talk about in the detox podcast, like, you know, coffee enemas and liver cleanses and like sauna and just detox, detox, detox. This is more about, like, I don't know, what supplements are out there, what, you know, what you should look for. So the first one, let's say for starters, I like blends. You know, I talk about that a lot, but a lot of these supplement companies, you know, they're run by these, you know, PhDs and such that have been in the field for a long time. And rather than say like, hey, you should take milk thistle, they will look and say, hey, you know, the research shows that you could take milk thistle and dandelion root and taurine and all these and B12 and B9. And like, that's going to be a better synergistic blend for your liver. So I'm a big, big fan of blends. So some of the ones that I really like to use or that I will, you know, use occasionally are things like Metacrin from Apex. Apex Energetics, you know, one of my favorite lines. This is from the K line, which means it's formulated by Dr. Karazian. And it has things in it like thiamine, B1, niacin, B2, you know, not at mega high doses, pantothenic acid, B5, magnesium, zinc, copper, molybdenum, has a decent amount of molybdenum. Molybdenum is really important for the liver. Milk thistle, dandelion, glycine for conjugation, methionine for the methionine cycle and homocysteine, N-acetyl L-cysteine, so that's for building glutathione, Gotu-Kola, which is for recycling glutathione, Asian ginseng, glutathione, bromelain. So like a blend of things in there. There's probably 20 things in here, but it's just really good for liver. So sometimes, let's say I see somebody and their liver enzymes are 38, and like, okay, let's put you on a liver support and let's retest it down the road and let's see if they come down. And if they come down, it's like, okay, good. That could have been transient. You know, I had a guy one time, he was a snowbird, so he was down like in Florida. He's from my area, but he's spent 6 months of the year in Florida. And we did labs, and I said, you got to go to the doctor like today. His liver enzymes were like 200 or something insane. And I said, you got to go to the doctor. This is outside of my scope. I did not know what's going on. And we had done, you know, labs before. It was like, whoa, 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 something's going on. And he was just sick. And I think he went to urgent care, went to the doctor, and by like, you know, 3 days later, his liver enzymes were back down to normal. So these things do change regularly, but let's say I find elevated liver enzymes, well, we might try just like a liver blend. Or let's say I'm doing a detox protocol with somebody where we're focusing on some other things. Well, I might have them just take this liver blend, even with no signs or symptoms. I might have them take, you know, one or two caps a day of this at a low dose just to support liver functions while we're trying to support hepatic biotransformation, while we're trying to get things out of the body, while we're maybe supporting methylation, or while we're taking binders or glutathione or whatever the case is. You gotta support all these drainage pathways. So that's Metacrin. Another one that I love is called Liver Sauce. You know, Quicksilver makes really good things. This is a liposomal. It's got lipoic acid. Also has some dandelion root, gentian root. So a lot of these are the essential oil of sweet orange and things, myrrh. A lot of these are bitters. So a lot of bitters not only increase bile flow, but also have some effect on like bile receptors and some things like that. Like bile acids. Honestly, I was going to do a podcast on bile acids. They're like so complex that I don't know that I can. It's like it's crazy, crazy complex bile acids. The research on bile acids is kind of like the research was on the microbiome, you know, 15 years ago. It's crazy. And I'm learning more and more about these bile acids every day. So it's like, you know, give me 6 months and I might do a podcast about it. But bitters are really, really good. So this also has quercetin, luteolin, you know, has some mast cell stabilizers, has some DIM, which is good for estrogen metabolism, has milk thistle. So a lot of things to just, you know, protect the liver in Liver Sauce. That's from Quicksilver. Then I'll also use, a lot of methylation support, so I'm not telling everything that I ever use. KL support from Cellcore, you know, I didn't pull that off the shelf. Another one's called Clearvite. This is a powder. So I'll use powders sometimes, because I can have people take like three powders in one drink once a day. So let's say Clearvite is to support detox. And then we throw in, you know, some other powders to support gut healing or support, you know, probiotics or something. This one has so many ingredients that I'm not going to read it. A lot of detox supports, you know, I don't like mega blends like multivitamins and stuff. They just try to hit everything. That's called a machine gun approach. This one does have a lot. It's essentially like a multivitamin with all the things that are in Clearvite, but there's a lot in it for detox. So there's a Clearvite blend that has evening primrose, milk thistle, quercetin, hesperidin, rutin, pagoda tree extract, enzyme blend, ginger. And then there's also an amino acid blend that has glutamine, alanine, glycine, isoleucine, tyrosine. You know, I'm not going to read them all, but all of those amino acids are really important. Vitamins and amino acids are very, very important for these phase one, phase two, cytochrome P450, just for all the processes in the liver. So anyway, those are some of the blends. Now, I mentioned a lot of the things in those blends that people use for the liver. So B vitamins. B vitamins are incredibly necessary. B vitamin deficiency and toxicity together will lead to liver issues, it'll lead to methylation issues, lead to lactic acidosis, will lead to metabolic problems. Then glutathione. I'm a huge fan of glutathione, but obviously, you know, we tread lightly. You know, I had a few comments on Instagram recently. They were like, oh, glutathione really messed me up. Like, well, you know, that's probably blame on the practitioner that you were working with, because I sometimes see people sensitive to glutathione and then we just say, okay, stop taking it and let's fix some things. And then they get back on it and they're fine. I've seen glutathione work wonders for people. Another one is carnitine. Carnitine is, I forget if I mentioned it when I was talking about that video that I just made for YouTube, but carnitine helps that fatty acid oxidation. And so when fatty acid oxidation in the liver has been blocked, then you need more carnitine. And as you get progressive liver damage, like let's say you get cirrhosis of the liver, you are going to decrease your carnitine biosynthesis. So your carnitine need is going to be much, much higher. So carnitine, acetyl L-carnitine is what I use for that. Another one is choline. Choline is really, really necessary for bile flow. Phosphatidylcholine, really good for cell membrane regeneration and things too, but you need a lot of choline for bile flow. Glycine, I mentioned, for conjugation. Taurine is for bile flow as well. Methionine, cysteine to build glutathione. All of these different amino acids have their individual roles, but something like Clearvite that has an amino acid blend. Sometimes if I see a reason We will use one of those by themselves, but oftentimes a blend covers all of your bases. But I do; those are probably the ones that I use the most, meaning carnitine, choline, glycine, taurine, and cysteine are probably the ones that, I use the most. And a set for a liver, especially not neurotransmitters. Then another one, the last one I'll talk about is calcium D-glucarate. Now this is a really interesting one, and this is for the glucuronidation. Now that's a really important marker, especially in women, because it clears estrogen. So it's related to that COMT and some of those other genetics that support phase two detoxification. And COMT is especially inactivates certain estrogens. So that's really, really relevant. But calcium D-glucarate, so when I will support this the most often is actually found on a stool test. There's a marker called fecal beta-glucuronidase. Beta-glucuronidase is an indication that you might have problems with your glucuronidation. It can come from dysbiosis of the gut. So just imbalanced gut bacteria can block glucuronidation. Or all the other reasons that I mentioned, but calcium D-glucarate can support glucuronidation. So a lot of times, a lot of these other things are pretty famous. Like you take a B vitamin, you take something like Clearvite powder, you're like, I'm detoxing. You take glutathione. But calcium D-glucarate is getting a little bit more into the weeds. There's not that many lab markers that are like, oh, your phase one is bad and your phase two is good, or vice versa. But fecal beta-glucuronidase, I think, is really, really an important finding. I'll see that on a GI map often. And occasionally, I'll use calcium D-glucarate without lab evidence to support that. But there better be some clinical symptoms, like, you know, somebody's estrogen builds up or somebody doesn't, you know, is just doesn't seem to be detoxifying things very well, then calcium D-glucarate can be very, very important. So, and then the herbs I already mentioned, like milk thistles, the most famous. Some of the others are bitters. But yeah. So the other thing I didn't mention, I'm not going to talk about, but like even fish oil and things like that, of like cholesterol, triglycerides, blood sugar. You know, I didn't talk that much about the metabolism aspect of the liver, more about the detox aspect. But what an amazing organ. And I'm just going to leave it at that. So no wonder it's very famous. No wonder people are getting great results from eating. I'll tell you what, too. You know, I do a lot of my phone consults and stuff. I've seen a slew of people, especially women, in the last, you know, year, where it's very, very trendy to eat organ supplements. It's very, very trendy. But I'll hear people say, man, I noticed a difference. I felt a difference. So, I mean, I eat liver. My kids will eat liver. It's not like our, you know, staple food. I'm not liver king by any means. And if you don't know who he is, you got to just go Google him. The man is an absolute beast, which is why he's so famous. He's like, you know, maybe the strongest person I've ever seen. He's just like a physical specimen. And he credits most of it to like eating a lot of liver and meat and things like that and living kind of this ancestral lifestyle, which I'm all for. But anyway, I digress. I think that liver is amazing. I think that if you can get your hands on some good clean liver, it's great to eat or to add. I also say, this will be the last thing maybe, we just got a quarter of a cow. We actually just got another one. So the one that we got, you know, a few months ago, we had the locker cut up some of the liver. You ever seen cow liver? This thing is freaking huge. But we had them blend liver into our ground beef so that we don't even notice. Our kids don't even notice. Like we make, last night we had taco salads. I guarantee there was liver in there and we don't even notice. So yeah, it's pretty cool that you can do that. But anyway, the liver is quite amazing. So give it some respect and treat it right. And it's going to treat you right. So that's it. Leave us a rating and review. Please share this with somebody. Share this with somebody who has liver issues. Share this with somebody who you share this with, like your drinking buddy. You know, I'm about to go on vacation tomorrow. And like, I'm not going to be like hard on my liver. You know, I don't want to say that, but I'm going to be sitting on the beach. I'm going to be drinking more cocktails than I am while I'm here. That's for sure. So I'm taking some things for my liver to support my liver. I'll also, sometimes people will ask me too. I know I said I'll wrap this up. People will ask me, they're like, I'm going to Vegas. I know I'm going to be drinking a lot. What should I take? And I'll give them stuff to protect their liver. And they're like, oh my gosh, I got this one girl all the time. She's like, I had 16 drinks and I was fine. I'm like, whoa. So anyway, there are things you can do and keep your liver healthy. And share this with your friend, protect your liver, and let us know if we're doing a good job with the podcast, rating, review, Instagram, YouTube, all the things. I'll link my new YouTube video in the show notes to this podcast too, and talk to you guys next time.